Snap Judgment Studios. My mother was 24 years old when she had me, her firstborn child, which, while not at all strange, it seems to me now impossibly young. Most of my own time when I was 24, I squandered in random bars and random cities. Instead, she told me that she prayed for a baby boy, and then she was given one. She fed me, birthed me, bathed me, kissed me, sang to me, read to me, and all the beautiful things that mothers do before our burden. Before this wall of misunderstanding and bewilderment that poisons our relationship had even taken root. Because I was first, for one full year, I did not have to share her. I basked in her full and undivided attention. Her eyes were the first thing I saw in the morning and the last thing I stared into before she bundled me into a blanket at night. I was not an exceptional child. My first words did not erupt early. My first steps occurred far outside the statistical average. A birthmark stained the side of my face. There was even talk from outside our house that maybe I wasn't quite right. But she treated me as if I were the special gift from God she thought I was. So young herself, so dutiful, as if nothing in all the world could possibly be more important than me. Why? Colicky, fever, slow, spotted. What is this impulse to sacrifice her own youth for mine? Well, today on Snap Judgment, a love letter of sorts to the woman who first taught me what the word love even means. Snap Judgment proudly presents Mama Knows Best. My name is from Washington, and there will be no content advisories on today's show because Mama does not appreciate that kind of language when you're listening to Snap Judgment. We begin with a story called My Mother Made Me. It's a series from Radiotopia Presents where writer Jason Reynolds and his mother Isabel explore a shared history and what happens when the child is no longer a child. I'll let Jason take it from here. Snap Judgment.
I was raised by a fascinating woman.
My mom was raised by two farmers, basically, a farmer and a farmer's wife. And so when I came around, it was kind of like, I'm going to give this boy everything I got and everything I didn't have to make sure that he grows up as a whole person.
I think about the things my mother taught us as kids about
it. Even if it was an ancient belief system, she had no problem saying, it doesn't make sense, so we don't have to believe that.
You know, no matter what else is going on, you make sure that your clothes ain't wrinkled and your shoes are clean. Right. It's like a big deal.
That's right. Ma, I got on linen.
Yeah, she's definitely a G and pretty much the star of this podcast. And you're going to hear from her soon. But first, think of me as her warm-up act. And let me tell y'all a story to get you primed for the Isabel Reynolds experience. A few years ago, I was on tour promoting a book I'd written called Look Both Ways, which is a collection of short stories exploring the moments young people get to become more of themselves without the watchful eye and wisdom of adults. I'd been on tons of book tours, trekking across the country from the smallest towns to the biggest cities, and usually when I showed up, I'd be given a lovely introduction, and then I'd basically stand at a microphone and talk for 45 minutes about the book, the making of it. Maybe I'd even read a little from it and crack some jokes. It was sort of like a strange routine, a one-man show. Performance art that ended with Q&A and an autograph line with some of the most adorable children on the planet. Kids who showed up ready to take pictures and tell me all their thoughts about my stories, which usually blurred into thoughts about theirs. It's an incredible experience for me. But over the years, it's become difficult to lift it all by myself. So some time ago, I asked my publicist if I could do my tour in conversation, which just means every stop someone would interview me about my work in front of an audience. And though it lacks some of the oomph that usually comes with my, let's call them performances, if the person sitting across from me is the right person, then the experience can still be pretty entertaining. Look, I've got my wish list. I mean, I'd love to chat with Terry Gross or Don Cheadle or, I don't know, Patti LaBelle, Angela Bassett, or somebody like Jonathan Majors. I feel like he'd be a good interviewer. Or maybe one of my uncles, like my Uncle Bob, who would only ask questions that would make me laugh. And we'd probably split a bottle of wine on stage and make a mess of things. Or maybe Jay-Z. Like I said, I got my wish list. But one person who I was fortunate enough to be interviewed by on the Look Both Ways tour is, to me, more legendary than everyone else I just named. Well, except for maybe Uncle Bob. I mean, this person is a cultural cornerstone, a legend's legend, a generational giant. And on top of all of that, he used to rock a mean hoop earring. I'm talking about the incomparable LeVar Burton. Yes, that LeVar Burton. From Reading Rainbow and Roots and Star Trek. And should have been Jeopardy, but we don't have to talk about that. It was a beautiful day in L.A., and when I showed up at Barnes & Noble's at the Grove, LeVar was waiting in the green room, which was actually the staff's break room because bookstores don't be glamorous, right? We introduce ourselves and chat briefly for a few moments before taking the stage. First 10 minutes of the interview, we ended up talking about our mothers. We spoke their names and waxed about how grateful we are for them, to have come through them, to have been of them. We even cried a little, and that was the beginning of the show. And I wish I could tell you that moment was the highlight, but it wasn't. The most memorable moment, for me at least, came after we finished signing books.
Our first moment of bonding was over our moms, around our moms.
Yeah, I reached out to LeVar to ask him if he remembers that conversation.
But as I recall, we spent some time that day also, you know, I prompted you, are you taking care of yourself, right?
Right.
And, you know, you sort of hemmed and hawed, and I got a very clear sense that this was an issue for you in your life, that this was something that you were struggling with. And I just wanted to, as someone who has had experience having to learn the need and necessity, painfully, painstakingly learn the need and necessity to prioritize my own health. And as, you know, someone who recognizes you, Jason, I see you, brother. I want you to be able to operate at your optimum capacity,
yeah,
right?
Man, I appreciate
it, man. Self-care is a huge part of that. And I got the sense from that your mother agrees with me.
She definitely does. Now that you're all warmed up, let's talk about my mom. Most Sundays, I pull up to my mother's house with a coffee in the New York Times. I stop in the middle of the driveway to grab the Washington Post she has delivered every week. Then I ring the doorbell. I got a key, but I never use it, mainly because I love the look of excitement on her face when she opens the door, even though she's always expecting me. Other than holiday decor, and on this Sunday, my mother had broken out the browns, oranges, and yellows for the upcoming Thanksgiving dinner, this house ain't changed in years. From the green carpet to the tchotchkes and old knickknacks that pepper the coffee table, to the gallery wall of random art, including a framed Washington Post profile on me from years ago, as moms do, to the strange assortment of clocks scattered around the living room, dining room, and kitchen, all of which are set to different times. Some 10 minutes fast, others 6 minutes slow. The radio is always on in the kitchen unless the television is on. And on Sundays, it's the TV. Which is strange because my mother don't never sit in the kitchen on Sunday. She sits in the office where there's also a TV.
Yeah. Deion look good, don't she?
Who is it?
That's Deion Ward. There she go.
Now, on Sunday, she makes what has to be a half a liter of instant coffee, which is why I bring my own, and holds up in her office, which used to be my older brother's room, and watches the news all day long.
I want to take a...
Except...
Come on, Lo. I want to take a selfie.
For when I come over.
Please send me a selfie. I would love to get a selfie from you every now and then. Your beautiful face.
Okay. Now, for me to take a selfie, what do I do? Hit this?
Mm-hmm. That means turn the camera around to face you. So that hit that button. Boom.
I'd say at least a third of my role as son is comprised of either fixing my mother's printer or teaching her how to use her latest piece of technology. The computer, a new television, and of course, her cell phone.
See, that's the one I took.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but I, you know.
That's a really good picture of you. You took that of you.
These Sundays are important to me because in some ways they serve as my church. As someone who's not the most religious man, there's some kind of altar for me to kneel at. And that altar happens to be at this home where we're sitting right now, the home of the great Isabel Reynolds, which also happens to be the home I grew up in. It's where I cut my teeth, lost my teeth, and grew new teeth. It's where she taught me to eat the world.
So what's new, babe?
Been a rough week.
In what way?
Furthermore, it's where I come to lay my burdens down.
I don't know. There's a lot going on, right? You know, every now and then, I had those times where I'm just like, you know, overwhelmed. Every day, every week, you sort of wake up, you can start your week, you put everything where it needs to be in your mind about all the things you have to do, all the people you have to do it for, all the work you have to do, all the, I mean, you know this, you've done it your whole life. And then sometimes, you just want to scream.
Yeah.
But I don't scream. At least I try not to. However, I feel whatever the weight of a scream is in my body. And I've been thinking a lot lately about where a person puts that weight. I mean, life is a lot of things, you know. Maybe it's more accurate to just say life is a lot. I guess it's this way for everyone, but I know it's this way for me. Don't get me wrong. There's so much laughter. There's so much joy, so much. But there are just as many moments where I feel so much pressure. The skin on my face feels stretched from the tension of tears, almost to the point of splitting some imaginary seam that runs from widow's peak to goatee. Days where one moment I'm basking in the weird affirmations of my life, that I've somehow made something of it, and I feel so useful to the world. And then, shortly after, I feel used by the world, completely depleted after giving whatever I have to whoever needs it.
You know, and I just, this was one of those weeks where I was kind of like, you know, because there's never a time where anyone who needs something from me says, maybe I won't ask. Maybe I won't ask him to do it. Except for you. You're the one I want to ask. You're the one I'm saying, ask me.
But don't nobody want to hear all that.
Don't nobody want to hear me crying about how living my dream should come with some kind of instruction booklet or at least a warning label. And the only way to deal with it is to play perspective games, to force feed myself emotional illusions like, but I wouldn't trade it for the world, or it's better than what I used to be doing, or be grateful.
I'm talking like strangers and the industry and the, you know, it's like, we need an interview, we need this, we need that, we need this, we need that, we need this thing, and that thing, and this thing, and that. And it's like, how? How am I supposed to do all of this and maintain some sense of mental health, get rest, take care of, like,
and the truth is, I wouldn't trade my life for anything. And it is better than what I used to do. And I am grateful, but I'm also human. Sure, I've seen and done things my family and many of my friends could have only dreamt of, but I don't mean there's not a heavy cost. So when what feels like the collective boot is upon my back, I always ask myself, where exactly am I supposed to put the weight? And then, just in time, Sunday comes.
What am I supposed to do?
Well, it's nobody's fault, baby. It's not what happens, it's how you react to what's happened. You know, you can either get all flustered and upset, blah, 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 or you just take it in stride. And one thing for sure, it will work itself out. Always does. And when you take your time, it works out to your benefit. It does. It really does. But you are so much like your mother in more ways than you would even realize. You may look like your daddy. I have to accept that. I ain't got no choice. But you know what, Jace? Motivational people or people who are driven are basically that way.
The irony's not lost on me that this is coming from a lady who struggles to take a selfie, but clearly don't struggle to see herself.
You made me like this. What do you think made you like this?
I think it's just part of my makeup, son.
And I kind of feel like it's part of mine. Something in me that pushes me because I can do anything. And by the way, I can do anything. You know how I know? 'Cause my mother told me so. Matter of fact, my mother made me tell myself so every night as a child. She made me say it loud enough for her to hear or after I recited my nightly prayers. It didn't matter how tired I was. It didn't matter if I was upset or annoyed or if we weren't getting along or even if I was sick. I had to say it aloud every single night in this same house. The TV playing in the kitchen loud enough for me to hear, but never loud enough to distract me from those four words, my non-negotiable mantra. I can do anything.
Just getting started. More family drama when our story continues. Stay tuned.